We're going on a journey this morning to that vague and undetermined place in the constant state of transition, the borderlands, a place where the forbidden and the prohibited are the inhabitants, the place where two cultures edge each other. I want to not just go there, but I actually want to suggest that we take Unitarian Universalism there and that we remain there. To sort of explain what I'm talking about, I'm going to have to start by telling you about two experiences I have with, or that I have had with, borders and borderlands. For this first one, we're going to start where we are in San Diego, but in your minds, if you'll go with me south and east into Texas and then into the southern tip of Texas where it dips into Mexico along the Rio Grande. This is Matamoros, Brownsville, McAllen, Reynosa, San Juan, Harlingen. And it's a region, the Texas-Mexico borderlands are a region that are both similar to our borderlands here in San Diego and a little bit different. There, as here, the grapefruits and oranges are growing in January, but there, temperatures rise to a very humid 100, 101 degrees in July. It is a place, the River Valley is a place where a dark-skinned mestiza image of the Virgin Mary welcomes travelers to one of the biggest pilgrimage sites in North America, the Our Lady of San Juan del Valle. She welcomes over 1 million visitors a year, and it's part of who she welcomes are migrant farm workers who are traveling in and out of the valley for work. So I was in the Texas-Mexico borderlands in this particular strip of land with a seminary group. I was there a number of years ago. We had spent a semester studying the U.S. Latino Church and the border and getting ready for this trip. It was a 10-day study and service and learning. And we boarded planes in New York City, we landed in San Antonio, and then we drove intentionally to sort of appreciate the scope all the way down into San Juan. And I had felt sort of the borderlands calling me, and I'm still not sure exactly how that had started and where that came from. And I will say that my experience in South Texas, it doesn't make me an expert on the border, but I share it because it had a very profound impact on me and on my sense of ministry. South Texas is a part of the continent that is characterized by what's called mestizaje. You guys know that word means cultural and racial and ethnic mixing. So it's a part of the country where Tex-Mex food is popular, where things happen that are influenced both by Mexican influences and European immigrant traditions. Where people are used to going back and forth across the border to visit family. They're used to going back and across the border to go shopping. People have family sort of all over on both sides. It's a place, one of my favorite images is of the South Texas couples dancing the two-step to Tejano music, which is a blend of Mexican and European immigrant music traditions. There's an accordion. It's delightful. On the Mexican side of the border, though, workers labor in factories or maquiladoras, and they make faucets and TVs and washing machines for U.S. markets. And so one day, one morning on our seminary trip, we crossed the border into Matamoros. And we sat on the floor of a tiny cement house, tiny person's home, and we sat in the bedroom, like on their bed, because that was the only place that was big enough for all 12 of us. And we were there to meet with women organizers, promotoras, who are workers and organizers in their community. And they stood up and they had made handwritten posters detailing the problems that they face in their lives, and particularly in the factories. Solvent contamination, unjustified firings, errors in pay, screaming supervisors, unreported accidents, no democracy in their union, and constant pressure to increase production. And this is grisly, but we heard about one woman who had had both hands cut off by machinery and had no restitution from the company. And we had spent almost a week in Texas meeting with different organizers and faith leaders, and had noticed, as you may have noticed in many activist and faith organizing communities, a certain amount of despair and a certain amount of burnout, that this situation in this strip of land in South Texas was so intractable that people didn't know what to do. But there was a different feeling here in this home, in this tiny home, and it was surprising to me. It was one of the first places where I didn't feel that feeling of despair and activist burnout. And someone we were with asked the women, "What keeps you going?" And another older woman just said, "Faith." Absolutely. And then they asked us if we would pray with them. And so we got together in a circle, we held hands, some of us laid hands on the women we were meeting, and our professor, who is a Disciples of Christ, liberal Disciples of Christ minister, prayed in Spanish. And it was one of the most moving experiences of that trip and of my seminary career. I left feeling like I'd been in the presence of something very holy and powerful. So that was my first trip to the borderlands, finding power and beauty in that in between. The second story happened a couple of years later, a couple Christmases ago. I was working at First Church of San Diego, and I joined a number of my congregants and some of our other activist friends at the Posada Sin Fronteras. Have any of you heard of the Posada Sin Fronteras? It is a event that happens annually at Friendship Park, right on the border. And it's a Christmas event, and it happens on both the U.S. And the Mexico side of the border. A posada, as some of you will know, is a Mexican and Latin American Christmas tradition. It's like caroling, but sort of different. There's a particular song that you sing, posada song, and the group of people will go from house to house. And you go to the house, and you say, "We're reenacting the story of Mary and Joseph looking for room at the inn." And so you knock on the door, and they open, and there's a lot of verses of, you know, can we come in? Can we have shelter? And the people inside say, "No, we don't know who you are. You're probably trying to rob us, and we don't have any room." And then the people on the outside say, "Please just let us in. We really just need a place to stay." And it goes back and forth for a long time, many verses, until finally the inside group says, "Oh, it's Mary and Joseph. I didn't recognize you. Please come in." And the door opens, and then you can have snacks. And so the Posada Sin Fronteras intentionally uses that that tradition, both as a way for people to sort of enjoy a Christmas tradition together, but also as a ritual and as a protest. So along the border wall, the Tijuana side of the border sings outside, and the San Diego side of the border sings inside. So what you have is you have the Tijuana side of the border saying, "Please let us in," were looking for shelter. And then we, on the U.S. side, saying, no, there's no room here. You're probably a thief. You know, you're probably here to beat us up. And I was surprised at how moving it was and how gut-wrenching it was to sing that part of the Posada song in that particular context. It's one thing to know that U.S. policies mean that families are on different sides of the border, but it's another, and to know how complicated that system is. And it's another sort of visceral thing to sing to people who you can see a little bit through the fence, no, we won't let you in, and to take on that role. And I know that in the congregation we have different views about immigration and immigrant policies, and that's okay. We're having a seminar about it, about the current system, afterwards, after second service, but I want you to know that it's okay for us to have different views about that. My hope in preaching about this and in our congregational commitment to wrestling with these issues is I hope that we can keep sight of those kind of live moments of recognizing the humanity and the vulnerability in everyone who is involved with the immigration process and everyone on this, in the borderlands and on the border. And that goes from border patrol agents to undocumented members of the community, from people who work for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to people who work for activist organizations working for immigration reform. So that's one thing, I guess, that my experiences of the borderlands have taught me, is to try to keep those moments of human connection and human vulnerability present and with me. And the other thing, of course, that happens when you do that, or when you see the pain on both sides of the border, is it seems true what Gloria Anzaldúa says in her reading, that the U.S.-Mexico border es una herida abierta, is an open wound, where the first world grates against the first, and where the third world grates against the first and bleeds. You heard some of the experience on the Matamoros side of the South Texas-Mexico borderlands. It's not a lot better on the Texas side. These are the poorest counties in Texas. They're characterized by people living in unincorporated townships called colonias, which are getting a little bit better, but for years have been just absolutely without any services. There's no running water, there's no sanitation. And because of the permanent border patrol checkpoints in South Texas and the desert, undocumented people are now trapped between effectively two borders. And so they're in this little strip of land, 100-mile strip of land, and they can't leave on either side. There are very few opportunities to go to school, very few opportunities for work. We talked to doctors and healers and heard about the stress-related disease and how rampant that is. So the U.S.-Mexico border es una herida abierta. And that happens, that border, that bleeding happens here in San Diego County too, right? It happens when immigrants and asylum seekers are met, fleeing dangers in their home countries, are met not with compassion, but with shouts of go home and concerns that the migrants would bring Ebola to Escondido, which is what happened at the hearing I attended in 2014. That bleeding happens when people that I know and respect tell me that for them, Escondido feels like living in a police state, that the local police treat them as subhuman. I think that the borderlands hold up a mirror to the anxieties of our whole society. So I think that what happens is that anxieties about us versus them that are actually existing all over the country get projected on to the borderlands and onto the vulnerable, often, people who live there and exist there. And what I see through that lens, through the idea of that this is sort of a projection of our national anxiety, is that we have deep anxiety about American identity. We have deep anxiety about power. And that we collectively have this feeling like our old concept of who is American, what is American, and what is our economy, those concepts feel shaky. And so they feel so shaky that we are throwing predator drones and fences and armored military vehicles at the border in an attempt to protect them. Anzaldúa says that borders are set up to define the places that are safe from the places that are unsafe, and to distinguish us from them. And so we're using the fencing and checkpoints and helicopters and predator drones and detention to try to more clearly and sharply draw those distinctions as they get more and more blurry. But the thing is, it's not going to work. It's a futile effort because the borderlands aren't actually just in a particular place. They're all over the country. They run through our lives and through our families. The borderlands are physically present wherever two or more cultures touch, where people of different races occupy the same territory, where lower, middle, and upper classes touch, where the space between two individuals shrinks with intimacy. So it runs through families with members living in San Diego, Tijuana, Los Angeles, families where maybe a U.S. citizen, a permanent resident, and an undocumented immigrant gather around the dinner table. The borderlands runs through people's bodies, people who are Mexican and American, people who are Latina and Black. Someone I went on that seminary trip with is Lebanese Dominican American. Hard to run a border through that. And I think because that borderlands, the vague and indeterminate place, already exists and it runs through our families and our lives, trying to draw a rigid border through it often ends up cutting into those families and into those people. Cutting between family members in the U.S. and Mexico, or trying to cut out and deny the complexity of racial and cultural identity. One organizer told me about a Mexican-Texan woman who was stopped and asked for her papers. And after producing her U.S. passport, the law enforcement officer slapped her on the head and said, "Try not to look so brown next time." Yeah. Still happening. As Unitarian Universalists, we are people who shouldn't stand for that, and we know that. We are people who search for truth and meaning, and that means recognizing the truth when we see it, including realities that have been marginalized or pushed aside, like the borderlands or like a borderlands identity have been. Acknowledging this reality of what has become kind of a third country between the U.S. and Mexico. And it means affirming the inherent worth and dignity of everyone, no matter how complex their cultural and racial and ethnic and sexual and many other facets identity is. We seek justice, we say in our mission, and that has to include justice for people bleeding on the open wound that is the border, and suffering wherever our national policies make scapegoats out of the vulnerable. I don't know all of the policy solutions to that. All I know is what it feels like to listen to the story of a migrant drowning in the river or to hear about a woman's injuries in a factory, or to know that there are grandmothers on the other side of the border fence singing to their grandchildren on the U.S. side at the Posada. I think what we can do, besides that, I think one thing we can do religiously as people of faith is to try to spend more time in the borderlands. Not just being near a literal border or sort of practicing crossing over the border, but to practice sort of what it means to sort of stay with one foot on each side in the vague and undetermined place. And I think that's something that we are perhaps uniquely qualified to work on, because I think religion has long found holiness and meaning in the borderlands. We talked last week some about the Bible and some of those stories. You will remember that the tribes of Israel encountered God in the wilderness, in between. In another tradition, Zen Buddhist koans use paradoxical statements to try to unlock deeper senses of meaning in this sort of undefined, transitory place we can find meaning and power. That I go back to that moment in that woman's house in Matamoros, Mexico, and how sitting there and holding hands and praying, I didn't feel despair, and I left knowing that I had been in the presence of persistence and insight and faith. And I say that I don't mean to romanticize the experience, but to know that there is something to learn from the faith and survival and the power in the border experience that I saw there. So my hope is that we work on living in the border and that we bring Unitarian Universalism with us to the borderlands. Like I said, I think we're uniquely qualified in some ways to do this because we have practice being a theological borderland. Some of us are very practiced at this. We take pride in the fact that this is a place where we don't have to choose between spirituality and rational thought, where you don't have to choose between Buddhist practice and Christian stories, where a family doesn't have to be just Jewish or just Catholic. We, for many years, have been a home for religiously blended families and theologically blended people. And that is a zone that certainly many other people would call prohibited and forbidden. We have some experience being both and defying categories. So let's stay here a while in this borderland. I think we can be a community where, not just for religiously blended people and theologically blended families, but on the cultural and racial and ethnic and sexual borderlands as well. It's a sort of a prohibited and unsettling and forbidden place, but I think in the borderlands, we are going to find deeper truth and deeper meaning and deeper connection with what is most important. Please join me in a minute of meditation.